Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm here with Kyle McKelvey. This week, we recap week two games. We have an interview with UCF head coach Greg Lovelady, and we look ahead to week three. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how's it going?
Very, very good. It's been a nice weekend. Just watched college baseball and relax with my dog.
Speaking of dog, big news in the Peters family household. We adopted a dog this weekend. Blue tick coonhound lab mix. And my wife didn't take much convincing, but was willing to hop on board with naming him Omaha. So pretty excited about that.
That's just great. Are you going to bring him to Omaha?
That's the dream. He's currently snoozing. There's a war of attrition between him and the cat, which hopefully will get resolved at some point. But they're learning to love each other.
That's good. That's better than my dog and cat's relationship. My wife has said that if Pepper, our dog, would just give a little bit of her love towards us to Kit Kat to give to her, to our cat to give to the dog, then everything would be fine. Like Pepper loves us too much, which is something that's hard to say, but she is just super intense all the time. But if the cat could just love the dog a little bit more than she does, then our house would be in balance.
Well, best of luck training your critters. I want to start off this with a little bit of trivia. So I opened up some stats in front of me, Kyle, and I have one that hopefully you don't know the answer to already. Which team has the longest active winning streak in the country right now? So something that we saw this weekend, we're going to get into it for sure, is Ole Miss ran their winning streak up to 20 games straight, obviously dating back to last year before they ran into UCF. So who's left?
Is it Arkansas? Is there anyone who's undefeated? Arkansas 7-0.
Arkansas is top 10. So they're 7-0 and won their last four games of the year last year. So Arkansas has an 11-game winning streak. Stetson has the most wins this year and has the longest winning streak of this year at 9. So the Hatters are 9-0. But there is one team that is on an 18-game winning streak right now.
Let's hear it.
The Navy Midshipmen.
Wow.
They finished last year on a 14-game winning streak and have started the season off 4-0.
Dang, that's awesome.
Yeah, hats off to the boys. The Middies. Navy. Yeah. All right, so let's get into the rest of the discussion. There's a lot to dive into from last week. I think the story of the week was just chaos. We had our nice, happy rankings that we felt pretty good about after week one. And basically every lower-ranked team beat a higher-ranked team. And that just caused total disruption in our rankings. In the end of the top 50 teams, only three of them ended up being ranked in the same spot as they were last week. So lots of shuffling in the rankings. And let's run down just 1 through 10 really quickly. So starting at the top, Arkansas 7-0 is the number one team in the country, still perfect. Behind them, Vanderbilt 6-1. They lost one game this weekend, but still won the series. Louisville, despite missing 11 of their starters over the weekend, won a series and has moved to 6-1. Number four, Mississippi State at 5-2, had a fun series with Tulane. Number five, LSU, is taking care of business in a way that we don't always see LSU take care of business against some inferior teams early in the season. Number six, dropping down from the top spot, is Ole Miss at 5-2. Georgia Tech is up 9 spots to number 7 at 6-1. Following the rambling wreck from Georgia Tech is Miami at number 8 at 3-3. Florida at number 9 at 6-2. And finally, at number 10, we have TCU at 5-2. So outside the top 10 there, Is there anyone else that stands out to you in the rest of the top 50?
Well, I just want to note one thing is that the top 10 is SEC and ACC, except for number 10, which is in the Big 12. So that's pretty shocking that there's that much consistency at the top. But another team that I want to shout out is ECU. They're at number 11, up from 13 last week. They've been pretty consistent. They're at 6-1 on the year. Another team moving on up is South Carolina after sweeping in two games. One game got postponed. So sweeping Clemson in two games. They're at number moved up from 30. Did anyone move down? Virginia moved down from 8-15 after losing to UNC in two games to UNC at home, or at UNC, I guess. That's about it for me.
I think a big part of why the top 10 is so full of ACC and SEC schools is the top Big 12 schools really laid an egg in week one and haven't quite recovered from that, but wouldn't be too surprised to see TCU and Texas Tech moving back up over time. Kind of notable too, you pointed out number 11 ECU from the American. They're now ranked ahead of the highest ranked Pac-12 team, UCLA. So that's kind of a big move for ECU. From the non-power conferences, we also have UC Santa Barbara at 14. We have a few teams cracking the top 25 for the first time. So we have Louisiana coming in at 24 and San Diego State coming in at 25. And then new to the rankings altogether, we have Pitt at 33, North Carolina at 40, Notre Dame at 42, and A&M sneaks back in at 45 after a nice showing in Round Rock.
San Francisco dropped after losing 3 out of 4, I believe, or was it 4 out of 4 to Cal?
Yeah. Yeah, Cal had not the best opening weekend themselves, but Cal rebounded by they did a 2 home and away series, so 4 games total, and Cal took 3 of those. So trending back in the right direction for Cal, but San Francisco took a big hit after going on the road and winning 2 out of 3 at UCLA in week one.
Wow, they're making the rounds of the power teams. They started off UCLA, then they have Cal, and next week they have Stanford. It's a tough schedule.
Yeah, on the West Coast, teams tend to be, there's a little bit more, for lack of a better word, incest amongst the team. They all end up playing better. They all end up playing against each other, it seems. But I think one of the big themes there that we're going to get to later is the ACC. But before we get to what happened in the ACC, let's talk a little bit about last week's pick'em. So to be bearer of bad news once again, Kyle has come out victorious on week 2 pick'em to move him to 2-0 on the season.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can accept your trophy in the mail. So we had Tulane going to Mississippi State. Kyle picked the sweep. I picked Mississippi State to win 2 out of 3. So there was a glimmer of success for me there. Mississippi State did end up winning 2 out of 3 of those games, but in the last 2 games, they walked off Tulane, and obviously then we're losing in the 9th in both of those games. That was a pretty shaky series for Mississippi State. Are you of the opinion that that's a sign of good things or bad things? Is it a good thing to be able to win those close games, or is this a series? I mean, you had Mississippi State as sweeping Tulane. Is that something that Mississippi State fans should be worried about?
I mean, a little bit, but you have to like that your offense is pretty consistent at coming up in the clutch. That's really important to have those veteran hitters who are consistent when it matters and you're down. So, and they this weekend, they're also down in the 9th in the first game, and the pitchers, I guess, failed a little bit in that one. But yeah, I think this probably shows a little bit more good about Tulane than it does bad about Mississippi State. That Tulane is able to stay with one of the top teams in the country for us. And yeah, I like I like Tulane as a team, and they're not super out of it for me. That Mississippi State will have more chances to prove themselves against other big teams in the SEC, and so will Tulane in the American, and then I'm sure they have midweeks against LSU and all that. But they don't really have this huge chance, like in a opening, like a weekend series, probably until ECU and Houston, like towards the end of the season, and UCF.
Yeah, I think that's something that is interesting to point out. If you, like we did, we thought Tulane was a top 30 type team coming into the year, and they were one of the four teams from the American that we said, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if they ended up winning the conference and hosting.
Right.
And I'd still say it wouldn't be shocking if Tulane wins the conference, but I kind of think their window for hosting a regional might have closed with this, because they lost opening weekend 2 out of 3 to Louisiana, and now 2 out of 3 to Mississippi State to end up as a top 16 seed. You have to have some RPI boosting wins and winning some of these games. Obviously no reason to panic yet. And I mean, a big standout from the weekend was Tulane's ace Friday night starter, Braden Olthoff, who is the American Conference pitcher of the week and pitched incredibly well, kept Tulane in that game and was the reason why they won that game ultimately. But I think my takeaway from this is normally that, you know, good teams find ways to win. And I don't know if Mississippi State fans would have drawn it up how it happened, but Mississippi State's offense came in the clutch when it mattered most. They did just enough. They exposed some of Tulane's bullpen depth issues and got the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. Mississippi All State's right. a really good team, as we know.
So moving on to South Carolina and Clemson. So the series was incomplete. It is incomplete. They only played 2 games over the weekend. You had South Carolina going 2-1. I had Clemson going 2-1. And as it currently stands, South Carolina is up 2-0 on Clemson. So this one goes to you, Kyle. The games in the series were really entertaining. So same as last series, this series had 2 walk-offs. So South Carolina walked off Clemson both games. My biggest takeaway from this is that Wes Clark is an absolute beast from South Carolina. He's hit 8 home runs in 6 games so far for an OPS of like 20,000. He's just having like a ridiculous year. I watched, I think it was game 2 in that series, and he hit a bomb. And he came up to bat again later on in the game, hit another home run. And I'm just sitting there like thinking, why are they pitching to him? Like
just walk him.
He is seeing the ball right now. So had like a Golden Spikes type of weekend performance and is putting up numbers. I mean, obviously no one expects him to hit 1.25 home runs per game, but his pace right now is pretty absurd.
Yeah. I tweeted over the weekend that he's on pace to hit 70 home runs if they play all 53 games of their season. That's probably not going to happen, but you never know.
Wes Clark had quite a weekend for himself and carried South Carolina and Kyle to the victory.
Almost victory. We'll have to wait until May whenever that one gets rescheduled.
So next up, let's chat about UConn at Southern Miss. This was another really just a well-played series. I think back-to-back weekends that UConn has done that. They lost 2 out of 3 at Virginia last weekend, and now they lost 2 out of 3 at Southern Miss this weekend. We both thought that UConn had a chance to pull the upset here, and we both picked UConn to win 2 out of 3. Southern Miss ended up winning 2 games. And again, this is the second week in a row that I caught some of this series, and I think more highly of both teams coming out of this series, just like I did with UConn and Virginia last weekend. So Southern Miss puts themselves in position to be one of the front runners, and they already were in Conference USA with Florida Atlantic probably at this point now. But we both missed the mark a little bit on that one, but not too far off.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, they ended up being pretty fun competitive games. Like, none of them were blowouts. Southern Miss won won the second game, but first 2 games by 1 run each. So it's not like it was a blowout in either one, in either case, falling a different area, different way, like, would have resulted in us being right on that one. So, I mean, both those teams, yeah, like we said, are pretty competitive, good teams that we like going forward. And UConn just has more of a chance to increase their Mighty High RPI going forward. Another series against Tech this weekend.
We talked about how UConn has 10 games on the road at top 50 teams. They're through six of them. They're 2-4 in those. When we spoke about it in the preseason, we thought that winning 3 or 4 would be a success for UConn in terms of building a resume. They're 2-4 with 4 games to go, all those at Tech. It'll be interesting to see if they can steal 1 or 2 at Tech in order to Texas Tech, that is, in order to make the non-conference play that they have be really meaningful.
Yeah, and kind of under the radar here, there's another tournament at Coastal this weekend where it's Miami of Ohio, Davidson, and Coastal Carolina, and UConn. So more for UConn there too.
All right, let's go to the last series. So we had Oregon State traveling to Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon has become a little bit of a giant killer in recent years, already knocking off Missouri 3 out of 4 this year, knocking off Oklahoma State 2 out of 3 last year. And I boldly picked the Lopers, the Grand Canyons, to win 3 out of 4 against Oregon State. You picked Oregon State to win 3 out of 4. Lo and behold, we had a 4-game sweep by Oregon State. Just a lot of games that were close until late, but Oregon State ran away with this one. And that's a statement weekend. I think anytime you sweep 4 games on the road, no matter who you play against, that's a statement weekend. That's not easy to do. But against a team that is a team that we had in the top 50, is still probably a team that, you know, is top 75, could end up doing really well in the WAC, top 1, 2, 3 team in the WAC. That's a good weekend for Oregon State.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and Grand Canyon ended up beating Missouri the week before, so that's like, we have Missouri as one of the lower teams in the SEC, but still, like, beating a Power 5 team, kind of playing up to that competition is still like they're a really good team. They have a chance to have a really good season, like you said.
Kyle, Power 5 is a 4-letter word on the podcast.
I'm sorry, the Power Conference.
All right, that's more permissible. That leaves room for the amorphous American or Big West or whoever pleases you.
Wherever we decide to begin the season.
Yeah. So Oregon State, they're getting it done through pitching, like they kind of always have. They're currently 7th in the country, allowing only 1.9 runs per game. But I would say their offense has been surprisingly exceeded expectations. They're also top 50 in offense. They're number 43 in runs scored per game at 7.6. So, I mean, you can do the math there. That's almost 6 run differential average per game. That's a good way to win ball games. Allow fewer than 2 runs and score 7 runs in a game. You're going to win a whole lot of games that way.
Yeah, and they're also really good at just regular hitting, consistent hitting. They're 17th in the country in just batting average, which we don't really care for as an individual player statistic, but for a team statistic, it is pretty good. It is a hard word to say. It's much better of a stat to read into for team level because it's, I don't know, not as, it's easier to be nuanced with that one, I guess.
So Oregon State, they got the job done this weekend. That propelled them up quite a bit in our rankings, 16 spots from 45 to 29. And they've really emerged as the 4th best team in the Pac-12, possibly the 3rd best even. So big weekend for Oregon State. Finally, we also took a look at the Round Rock Classic. And this is the one I'm most bitter about. So on the podcast, we decided that we couldn't pick the same team. I got to Auburn first. Auburn had an okay weekend. They beat A&M, but that's all that they did. And you, choosing amongst the 3 remaining teams, settled on Texas A&M, who I thought, after losing to Abilene Christian in the midweek and barely walking off Tarleton State was an awful pick, and then they go and go 2-1, which they matched with Oklahoma, but had the head-to-head over Oklahoma. And so A&M won the Round Rock Classic. Kyle, you got this one right.
Yeah, that was just kind of a gut feel. I probably would have picked Auburn if you hadn't, but I would have felt bad about that one. I mean, Auburn, it would have been hard to pick against Auburn because they had just gone off beating Alabama A&M in the midweek 18-2 and 33-0. So I guess they just used up all of their runs in the midweek.
It was one of those situations where, like, especially early on in that game against Oklahoma, I think it was.
First game.
But like, they could have scored 10 runs easily in that game. Just like so many situations where they had runners on, bases loaded, and came away with nothing or with one run. And it just felt like Auburn was going to explode on offense and just were so close to running away with the game. And they didn't. They scored, what, 3 runs in total, right? I think so.
Yeah.
they didn't do a good job of situational hitting, and that cost them.
It's funny, though. That's like the opposite of what happened in the Sunday game against A&M. They ended up, like, getting to the A&M bullpen after they ran away Jonathan Childress, A&M starter. And they kind of did the same thing. Like, they had a bunch of runners on base, and then the timely hit just fell right where they needed it to, like, away from the gloves. So it's just kind of they're a luck-based team. You need to get one of those luck stats and try and figure out how lucky Auburn is.
Yeah, maybe they just got unlucky earlier in the weekend. But I think one of the big takeaways from Round Rock was the A&M pitching staff, particularly the starting rotation, where Sains, Miller, and Childress, I thought, looked pretty good on the weekend, especially yeah. Sains opening up. Just the dominance that they had in this weekend compared to the shakiness of the series against Xavier, they're gonna need that in the SEC. I still don't know where I compare them to SEC West staffs, but after week one, it was worrisome. And now I can imagine again that A&M could compete against some of these teams.
Yeah, it was interesting too. They switched around the rotation from week one. It was week one, it was Bryce Miller, then Sains, and week two, it's Sains and Miller. And Sains ended up going 5 2/3, only allowing like 3 earned runs. But otherwise, he looked pretty solid, just pretty consistent game, no walks. And Bryce Miller also had himself a good game. He went on Saturday, he went five innings pitched with only one hit allowed and no runs. So, yeah, just cleaner, more consistent games for A&M pitching will help them going forward just in the season.
And then they had that 1-7-run first inning against Baylor, and that shut the door on
OU.
Against Oklahoma, and that kind of shut the door against them. That's also not really something we're used to seeing from A&M, the ability to put together big runs or big innings. So they'll be curious moving forward to see if they can do that. They have New Mexico State coming into town. New Mexico State's not quite the team they were last year when A&M swept, I believe, New Mexico State at home. So we'll see if they can reproduce that result from last year.
Hurts when you lose Nick Gonzalez.
Yeah, it's crazy when you lose a generational type talent for your program, top 10 pick, that it really hurts the team. Still a solid team coming into town. At this point in the season, A&M would love to start racking up wins. I got to think the rest of the teams that were at the Round Rock Classic probably head out from that thinking that was a, if not successful weekend, a weekend to build off of. No one went 0-3. So it was interesting baseball. I think that I came away thinking probably that basically some of the question marks that were exposed about, or that we thought about OU heading into the season, were there. Questionable pitching depth, especially in the rotation after losing all their weekend guys. I thought that Baylor looked incredibly shaky, especially on defense early on, but settled down to the rest of the weekend, and that Auburn still looks like a top 30 type team. So fun tournament.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And we'll get to this in just a little bit, but we got another one coming up in Frisco in this next weekend, so we'll see if we talk about that later. All right, last thing to talk about before we get to Ole Miss UCF is a little bit about the ACC chaos. So, I mean, I think every ACC underdog won this weekend. Maybe that's not quite, but Pitt swept Florida State on the road. Absolutely crazy. I never would have believed that could have happened. Georgia Tech swept NC State again on the road. Boston College took 2 out of 3 at Duke. Virginia Tech took 2 out of 3 at Miami. North Carolina at home took 2 out of 3 off of UVA. And Notre Dame went to Wake and took 2 out of 3. So, I mean, home teams really struggled, except for North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think you and I decided that this weekend was more of a reflection of the depth of the ACC. And that's evidenced by the fact that we have 13 ACC teams ranked in our top 50. And that's actually the first time in poll history we have more ACC teams than SEC teams ranked. So that's kind of an interesting tidbit there. For the record, we have 12 SEC teams ranked in the top 50. So they're not far behind. But I think the big question for me after this weekend is one, how lucky do you have to feel if you're Louisville not starting ACC play on this weekend? Because apparently it was cursed for top ranked teams. So they got this one out. But can anyone actually challenge Louisville now? Like all these teams, Miami, Virginia, Florida State, these are teams that we thought would be competing at the top, winning the ACC tournament. And now there's some question marks.
Yeah, there are definitely question marks. I think that the top of the conference is still there, and then there's a gap, and then but like that depth is kind of what we're talking about, how close the middle is, and there's not really bad teams to beat up on. So
yeah, it's going to be one of those. The middle and the bottom, I think, is smaller than I would have thought.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think if it's going to be hard to imagine, apart from I guess Louisville, one team just running away with the division and winning. So out of 36 games, winning like 30 of them or something. I think they're going to be a lot of 18 and 18 teams around there, like plus or minus 2, just because everyone, you win 2 out of 3 at home and then you lose 2 out of 3 on the road. And that's still 3-3. So yeah, there's going to be some teams like that, but one team that I think could compete, could challenge Louisville, and they have a chance this weekend to prove me wrong or right, is Georgia Tech. They have just an electric offense that I guess I didn't really expect coming in. I expected Wake to have the best offense in the conference, and Wake has struggled so far. But Georgia Tech was just tearing up the base paths this weekend in their road sweep of NC State. Just runners on base in every inning, it seemed like. And just on Saturday, I think only – one of their players didn't get a hit and he got 2 walks. So yeah, just consistency up and down the lineup. And their pitchers aren't too bad either. They limited NC State this weekend pretty handily.
Yep. That Georgia Tech offense is averaging over 8 runs a game. So pretty dangerous offense. Yeah. I still like Miami. Like, I think Miami could compete at the top of the conference still. They were obviously exposed this weekend by Virginia Tech, losing 2 out of 3 at home. I think some of the question marks that we had about Miami was their starting pitching. So they also, like Oklahoma, lost their entire weekend rotation. Fetterman had an okay start on them for Friday night, giving up 5 runs, I believe, and just under 6 innings pitched. Rosario's had a good, he had a 7 inning shutout going on Saturday, and then Medeiros had a little bit of a bad start, that got a little bit dinged up on Sunday. I think that's the type of thing, because some of those guys, I mean, the last 2 guys there are freshmen, but none of them have weekend starting rotation experience. That's the type of thing that maybe as ACC play continues, they gain experience, gain confidence, and they're not quite the same team at the end of the season as they are now. We've already seen their ceiling. They took 2 out of 3 at Florida to start the year. So we know that they can beat the best teams in the country. This feels like a type of team that might have some growing pains along the way. And, you know, come June, we might look back on this series and think of it as a blip on the radar as opposed to a signs of things to come.
Yeah, I think it's one of those series that's better that it comes now so that your team has some time to learn from it and grow. It'd be scary, I guess, if you're Miami, if this came at the last week of the season and you're like, oh my God, we have so many things to learn about our team, but like we still need to grow some tournaments next week. But yeah, I think it's fine this happening now, especially after they beat Florida on the road. If they had lost to Florida, like 2 out of 3 lost to Florida, I'd be pretty questionable on this team. Like they would have had a lot of questions to answer in ACC play for me. But like we know that they can do it against the top team in the country, one of our top teams in the country. So yeah, it's interesting.
Definitely interesting. But gosh, I mean, wouldn't you hate to be Florida State or NC State right now, starting off ACC play at home 0-3? I mean, you're really behind the 8 ball in terms of getting to 500 in conference or better.
Yeah, for sure. And that was Pitt's first sweep of Florida State ever, and not just home or on the road. That's crazy.
Doesn't surprise me. Florida State's not used to losing 3 games in a row.
That's true. And Pitt's not used to like beating these top teams from the South. Like Pitt baseball is not their sport. Pitt basketball is more their sport. Football is more their sport.
Yeah, they've been trending in the right direction over the last few years, and maybe it's finally come to fruition, though.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, let's get to Ole Miss UCF, because that was the story of the weekend. Ole Miss, 20-game winning streak on the line, number one team in the country, finished 3-0 at the college baseball showdown, was the unanimous number one team in the country across the board. They come out and lose 2 out of 3 to UCF. And the way they did it was they played one game on Friday, and they did a doubleheader on Saturday due to weather. In the first game of that doubleheader, UCF actually had the lead heading into the bottom of the ninth, and Ole Miss walked them off. That ended up being the only thing that kept Ole Miss from getting swept, because UCF came in game 2 of the doubleheader, scored in the top of the first and never really looked back and clinched the series. So Ole Miss fans got to feel pretty crappy about how the way this went. UCF was coming in with a 1-3 record, but it was a little bit of an odd 1-3 record. They lost 2 out of 3 to Florida Atlantic, and then they lost a midweek to Stetson. But all of that was without their head coach, Greg Lovelady. He was out because of COVID protocol. So they lost 3 out of 4 to start the season without their head coach, got him back, traveled to Ole Miss, and took 2 out of 3. Pretty good weekend for the Knights.
Talk about an up and down start.
Yeah, I mean, they've had like a whole season's worth of emotions in 2 weeks.
For sure. Yeah, and they played pretty consistent baseball this weekend. They like limiting the number of pitchers that they used, and pitchers having pretty complete games on Sunday, or sorry, not Sunday, the second game on Saturday, their starter went 6 and then their long guy went 3. So it's the whole game. They only allowed 2 runs in that game and 13 strikeouts. That's a recipe for success for you and not so much for the other team. So their pitching has some bright spots to look forward to in the year.
And that's one thing that Coach Lovelady's going to touch on in the interview that we have coming up with him, is that opening weekend, they had some defensive issues that really led to some bad pitching lines with like a good number of unearned runs for his pitchers. And the defense really stepped up against Ole Miss, allowed pitchers to have short innings, didn't put runners on base for free. And across the 3 starts, I think the UCF starters had 18 innings pitched and only gave up 5 runs. And that's against an Ole Miss team that has one of the best offenses in the country. So that's a pretty impressive weekend for a bunch of guys who kind of got knocked around a little bit in opening weekend against Florida Atlantic. So without further ado, Let's go ahead and take a quick break and then get to the interview with UCF head coach Greg Lovelady. We're welcoming in UCF head coach Greg Lovelady to the podcast. Your Knights went into Oxford, not an easy place to win. You took 2 out of 3 games against the number one team in the country. So what's your biggest takeaway from the weekend?
I was just glad to see our guys getting back, you know, back to kind of what I thought we were in terms of just the energy and the ability and everything. You know, we obviously had a rough start to the season. I mean, obviously I wasn't even there. I had COVID and missed the first 4 games. So I wasn't even in the dugout. So it's hard to me to compare, but just watching it online and watching the guys and obviously talking to the older guys, it just, you know, I think we got punched in the mouth of opening weekend, kind of, you know, had a vision of, hey, we're just going to continue where we left off last year. And, you know, just some errors and a big hit that they got, a grand slam, and that kind of just started the snowball effect in both games. And, we just really pitched like crap. And when we needed to score a couple more runs, we just couldn't do it. So, and then we came out really, really flat on Tuesday. And so here we are, 1-3. And I think the guys were just like, whoa, like, we just got punched in the mouth and just kind of stunned for a little bit, you know what I mean? But I felt like we got back to kind of exactly where we were last year in terms of the energy. And, you know, we obviously felt like we won 26 and a half innings. You know, we get walked off in game 2. We were one out away from sweeping. And last year was awesome at Auburn, but and very similar, I mean, two very, very good teams. I mean, obviously had to beat the a first rounder last year on Friday night, and we probably beat a first rounder this Friday night. But obviously the atmosphere is way different, way more difficult. Now, again, COVID helped us a little bit because there wasn't as many fans as there could have been probably. But I'm not sure that it would have been a ton more either, you know. So, but the fans were awesome, like, and when I mean awesome, they were, like, brutally all over our kids in the outfield and the bullpen, like just absolutely just demolished them. And our kids can't stop talking about it. And again, that's probably the reason why we go. We want to play in regional, super regional type atmospheres against really good teams, but you also want to go to places that you're going to talk about for the rest of your life and those memories. And so it's a tough place to play and to go and play as well as we did. I was just proud of the kids for bouncing back. I mean, we could have sulked and continued to spiral kind of downward and, but our kids didn't. I mean, we showed some toughness, especially on Saturday. I mean, to lose the first game and to walk off in a doubleheader, and feel like, man, we were 1 out away. We could have just let that kind of bleed over into game 3 and game 2 of the doubleheader and just kind of, you know, get punched in the mouth again and just not be out of the game in the first inning. And we threw the first punch in game 3 and we kind of stunned them, I think, and were able to get a big lead and be able to hold on. So I was just proud of the toughness, proud of the way the guys bounced back, and just proud of the energy. And it's good to see us play, you know, a lot better baseball than we did the first weekend.
A lot happened on that Saturday. So first off, the schedule just was adjusted due to weather. So like you mentioned, you had to play a doubleheader, and there's a real gut punch there where it looked like you had the series clinched in the first game. Ole Miss walks it off. What's the conversation like after that that allowed you to be able to go back in game 2 and refocus?
Well, I mean, it was just telling the truth. Like, look, that sucked. Like, and you guys are, you know, hurt and upset and, you know, it's like you had something in your grasp and it got stolen from you. You know what I mean? And, but that's the game of baseball, and it's also the game of life. And like, the next game is coming, like in 45 minutes, like we have to be ready. Like we can, and I basically told him, like, we can sit here and this is a going to be an absolute sign of our toughness on this team. And then we've shown some great toughness in both games. Like the first game, you know, getting up the home run, the 9th, you know, we battled through it. And I thought our pitching staff did a great job. The weather, the interference, like there was just a ton of different things that we showed some toughness to. And this was just, I just challenged the guys, like, this is going to show our true toughness. It's not about winning and losing, but how are we going to come out? What's the energy level going to be like? Like, because we can either, 2 choices. We can sulk and mope and just go out there and lay our gloves out there and just get punched in the mouth again and the what ifs, or we can go out there and show how tough we are and have short memories You know, like nothing gets taken from this game to the next game. Like, you know, they don't get a 2-run spotted lead because they walked us off in this game. Like it's 0-0. Like, and we got to be able to be tough enough to move on and go play this game and fight like crazy to win the series. You know, our goals every weekend is to win the series, and we got an opportunity to do that. And we had a chance right there and we blew it, but like we got another chance. Like, and you can either go out there and show them like, hey man, like we're the real deal and go win the series, or you can go out there and just mope that you should have won the second, you know, the first game of the doubleheader and just let them pounce all over you. And so just challenge the guys. And you know, luckily they were up for the challenge and came back, like I said, and threw the first punch in the first game. And I think that was a big, once that kind of started, I think our guys were like, all right, we got this, and just kind of rode that wave to the end.
Can you talk about your pitching progress from week one? Because there's a little bit of a shaky start to the year for you in terms of pitching, but especially your starters against Ole Miss, just 5 earned runs and 18 innings pitched, and really kept you in those games. How has the pitching progressed just week two to week one?
Yeah, you know, again, I think the pitching was a little bit overblown last week in terms of how bad they were. You know, you look at Colton Gordon, he gives up 5 runs in 5 innings. I think 4 of them were unearned. You know, and we just made two plays that were errors, or probably was another play that should have been made. And Colton had to pitch better. He didn't pitch great at all, but he didn't pitch terrible. Like, you know, you make those two plays and he probably gives up 2 or 3 runs, you know what I mean? Like, and maybe 1, like, and so then that all of a sudden that's a different narrative. Right. And obviously, now Hunter was a big one. And again, Hunter came out with great stuff in game 2, Saturday game last week, and against FAU, and first clean, you know, had a clean first inning, looked really good. You know, they came out, got a hit, and then it was a walk and maybe another hit. And then the grand slam, and that kind of, that was just like a he didn't handle it very well, like just was upset. You know, and again, one of the things that I had talked about, you know, Hunter before the season started was just how much his maturity, you know, in practice the week before, he gave up 2 home runs. Problem was there were 2 solo shots, and I think those were the only 2 hits he gave up in 5 innings. But he managed and he handled it and he moved on. And you know, the home runs didn't affect him at all. He just went on to the next pitch. And I just felt like when he gave up the grand slam, it was kind of like, again, that same thing, a microcosm of our team. He just got punched in the face, and he was like, oh my gosh, like I just gave up a grand slam, and we were up 2-0, and now we're down 4-2, and then just lost control and command, and we didn't get him out of there fast enough. We couldn't get him out of there fast enough, and you know, and then we brought in a freshman, his first outing, and, you know, again, FAU, the ballpark plays really small, and they're a really older team, and they took advantage of some bad pitches, and next you know, a 12-run inning, but, so that one 12-run inning that they get, you know, if you take away that inning, like, we outscore them 15-6 or something like that the rest of the game, and so, again, that one inning just was like a punch in the face and a snowball that we just didn't handle very well mentally. And then AJ Jones comes back on Sunday and he gives up, he goes 5 innings or 4 or 5 innings. He gives up 1 3-run homer. And that was it. Like, he pitched brilliantly other than the 3-run homer. So, you know, again, it wasn't as bad as I feel like people made it out to be, but I just, again, I thought we handled mentally just the managing the game and some things that didn't happen. Again, Colton had to pitch in bad weather on Friday night, opening night, and I thought that bothered him a little bit. And then he had to come back and pitch in it again, and I thought he was much better prepared. He had practiced pitching in the rain the week before, and so those first 4 or 5 innings, it was off and on rain, and I thought he handled that a whole lot better. He had a lot more interference, too. I mean, he's pitching against one of his high school buddies, pitched on the same summer team in Nikhazy. So, like, he had a lot of different things that I thought he managed just way better. And so, again, I thought that there were some big moments where last week we kind of succumbed to him. This week I thought we were just mentally tougher. Hunter, the same thing, gives up the home run, like in the second inning maybe, or first inning, I can't remember, but home run off dead center. And you're like, oh my gosh, like here we go again. And again, I just the maturity of, okay, like, no big deal. Like, I gave up 3 runs. Like, I just gotta hold him here. And because, again, we had talked to him last week after the grand slam, we're down 4-2 or 5-2, whatever it is. Like, just hold him there and we win the game. Like, if you just come out of the game after 5 innings and give up 5 runs, like, then we still win the game. You know what I mean? I just didn't feel like he did that. I felt like he felt like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe I just blew the lead and I already gave four runs, you know, I had four runs and it just got into his head. So I felt like he managed the game this time and, you know, does a tremendous job and is able to get whatever five great innings for us and was able to hold him to three runs. And, you know, we obviously came back late in the game and got back in the lead and whatnot. So, you know, he did everything he was supposed to do that he didn't do last week. And then AJ obviously was just really, really good and pitched tremendously well. And again, to be able to go – and again, he managed the game well. I mean, he went six innings and he had that bases loaded in the sixth and had a chance for them to take the lead and blow it open. And he managed and got the big strikeout with the bases loaded. And again – three-run homer when he had that kind of inning, he couldn't execute the pitch and got hurt. And this week he was able to execute and do the thing. So again, I just thought mentally the starting pitchers managed the game a whole lot better. And so that was again, and Zach Bennett, who the guy who gave up the second grand slam in FAU, his first outing, as a freshman, now he's got a little bit more comfort level into him. He comes out here and throws three pretty dominant innings. You know what I mean? But again, he managed. And again, we try to teach our kids to learn from other guys. So he's been listening to us talk to the starting pitchers all week. And he gets a bases loaded, no outs, and very easily could have melted down. And now he gets a double play and a strikeout and gives up one run from that. Like, again, just manage that so well mentally, just being able to execute pitches. Just worry about this pitch. Don't worry about, oh my gosh, how do I get three outs with bases loaded? Like, don't worry about that. Just worry about trying to get this, execute this pitch and good things will happen. And that's how you get out of that inning, by only giving up one run, which I thought was, you know, something that a veteran presence does. And here he is at his second career outing, or third career outing. He got a couple innings against Stetson, but, so, I mean, again, we just, we're moving the needle, man. We're getting better. And again, obviously it helps when you get, you know, we played really good defense and starting pitchers managed the game way better and handled some of the stress better. And, you know, again, I don't know, you know, Hunter Patterson, like, I don't know if he pitches the way he did, if he doesn't go through what he did on the opening weekend. So it's all part of that process. And again, we got punched in the face early in week one. And I felt like our guys bounced back in week two and really, you know, figured it out and proud of them.
At the plate, you had a couple of big hits from Ben McCabe with a few homers on the weekend. Yeah. And then Alex Freeland, a guy who we picked as a preseason freshman All-American, is making us look really good because he had a nice weekend too.
Yep.
Speak to those guys' performances a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, just huge. I mean, Alex, just as a freshman, to be able to do what he's done, you know, he hit over 500 for the weekend. He's hitting 500 for the year. I mean, he's just been, more walks than strikeouts. I mean, just doing a great job, playing great defense. I mean, again, he booted the first ball ever hit to him in opening day. And since then has played tremendous defense for us. You know, showing maturity at the plate, not chasing bad pitches. Like, and then being able to put barrels on balls. I mean, he hit an oppo home run and the opening weekend. So, I mean, just being able to do some really, really good things to help us. And then obviously McCabe, I mean, he has such unbelievable power. I mean, that ball he hit the center field was absolutely demolished. And then hits another one in the left field. And you can just see, and then again, that guy that's been in the program for 3 years is just starting to understand himself and understand what he can and can't do and what pitches he can and can't hit. You know, obviously Ben's been huge. I mean, he's got 14 RBIs through seven games. Like, I mean, that's big time stuff. So, it's just proud of those two guys. But again, I mean, I think the one cool thing about, I mean, we try to have a dynamic offense. We want to be able to win different ways. And we obviously hit the home runs by Rathbone and Crouch in game one to take the lead. And then in game three, it was more like, you know, McCabe hits the big home run, but then it was a solo shot. And then it was just get a guy on, steal a base, you know, base double, scores a run. You know what I mean? Like, we scored one run. Like, we had to steal bases. You know, we had to do different things. We had to bunt. We got a bunt base hit. Like, so when we were doing different things, and it was 1-9. I mean, obviously Freeland and McCabe led the team, and they had the best weekends. But I mean, everybody else put together at bats, put together hits, put together stolen bases. You know, every single person that played in the game did something offensively to help us win. I mean, Tom Joseph had a couple of hits in that middle game. Matt Archer had a bunch of hits. There were a couple of hits like that were big. Pablo Ruiz had a huge double. Obviously, Crouch and Rathbone, like I said, with those big home runs. And Rathbone had, you know, two other hits other than the home run. So I mean, Jeffrey Pena stole two bags and got on base four times. And he didn't have a great weekend for him. So I mean, but just one through nine, I mean, I felt like the offense, everybody did something to help us win. So it just wasn't one or two guys that we had to rely on. Like every game was somebody else that had two or three hits, and which is awesome. I mean, that's what you got to do. You can't rely on one or two guys. It's too risky. So to have the guys, and again, we lost our three hole hitter in the game one halfway through with a lower leg injury. So, you know, we didn't get to play him either of the games of the doubleheader. So again, just the toughness of next guy up, guys coming in and stepping up. We had to play some guys, not out of position, but like Rathbone came in and played first base, which he hadn't really done at all since we've been back. In the winter, like he played a little bit in the fall, just kind of as an emergency thing. And, you know, and then McCabe, who's been playing first base in practice, has never played first base in a real game, played first base. Like, so we did some different things, you know, just to try to get through the weekend with the injury and all that kind of stuff. And so again, just the toughness that the guy showed, I thought was impressive.
You referenced it earlier, but this is the second straight year you've gone on the road and beaten an SEC team in a series. Last year you swept Auburn, this year taking 2 out of 3 at Ole Miss. Is there a different mentality going into these weekends?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I guess, you know, you just want to, you know, you understand that winning these kinds of games, like, kind of, you know, put you on the map, so to speak, or gets people's attention. So, I mean, I don't think that, you know, we don't try to do anything differently, but I mean, I think the kids just understand like the magnitude of who you're playing in and all that kind of stuff, and want to show out and let everybody know like what this program is about and who they are as kids and who they are as baseball players. And I mean, I think that our entire league, I mean, you look at our entire league, I thought we had a great weekend playing some really, really good competition. But our league doesn't get enough respect. And I think that our whole entire league every weekend feels like, especially early on, that we got to prove to everybody that we feel like we're the second best league in the country. And that we've proven that time after time in terms of the success that we had, and that every week's a grind and every team has a chance to win our league. And there are no easy weekends, and there's really only one other league that can say that, you know what I mean? And so I think that we have the talent, we've had the guys that have been, you know, top draft picks and things like that. And, you know, we might not be as top heavy as a couple leagues in terms of talent, but when you look at, you know, one through eight in our league and everything like that, like it's really, really good. And it is tough, and it is really, really well coached and really, really good baseball players. And I think that we all are trying to go out there to prove that our league should be getting more respect, especially when it comes to the NCAA tournament, that we should be having 4 or 5 bids every single year because our guys, our teams deserve it. And so I think that kind of vibrate, you know, or goes through our league, like from every head coach, like wanting to prove that we're better than what maybe we get credit for.
So conference play is around the corner, but before that, this week you have a rematch against Stetson and then a weekend with Liberty. How do you refocus after a big series win to face a Stetson team that you already know firsthand is really dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, we just got to be ourselves, right? Like, we just got to continue to play. You know, we talk about raising the bar every single game, and every opportunity is, again, you want to prove that Ole Miss wasn't a fluke. You want to prove that we are the real deal. And you have to do that every single day. And we talked about it, like, we got to do it at practice tomorrow. We got to go out and practice tomorrow on Tuesday and prove to ourselves and just, you know, anybody that comes to practice, if it's a scout or whatnot, to prove, like, hey, man, like, we earned that win this weekend. Like, they didn't lose those games. Like, we beat them, you know what I mean? Like, and we're a really, really good team. And the some of the love that we got preseason, that we didn't do a very good job of proving those people that they were smart by putting us in those rankings and all that kind of stuff. Like, that was the aberration, us losing, not us winning this weekend. And we got to prove that every time we go out on the field. So we go and practice on Tuesday. We got to prove to everybody that who the real us is. And then we go on Stetson on Wednesday. We got to do the same thing. Like, we got to prove that we didn't play well. And we didn't show up on the last time we played. And we got to go out there and prove it. And it doesn't mean wins or losses. That just means by the energy and how you play the game and you know, sometimes you're going to play a really good game and lose. That's the game of baseball. But we want to go out there and feel like they beat us. You know what I mean? Like we did everything we could and the ball didn't go our way that day. We didn't feel like that was the case that last Tuesday. We didn't even show up. So, and again, they played really, really well. And not saying that we would have won if we had played well, but we didn't make it a competitive game, because we didn't, we're still in shell shock. So, we got to do a much better job of showing up and doing what we can to at least give ourselves a chance to win the game. You know what I mean? And again, we got to do that against Liberty and then North Florida and then FAU and Jacksonville and Florida State and Troy before we get to South Florida. And so we got to continue to try to move the needle, get better, raise the bar every single day in practice, raise the bar every time we get a chance to strap it on and play somebody else. And, again, I thought we did a good job of that last year. Once we beat Auburn, like we just kept going, kept playing. So we got to continue that and understand that, you know, I think they realize it now, like how easily you can, you better bring your A game or you get knocked on your tail. You know what I mean? And so we got to take this, what we did this weekend and kind of continue to move forward, and try to keep moving the program forward. And again, raising that bar every single day. Cause you don't want to be in that same feeling that we had, you know, opening weekend.
Well, Coach, congrats again on the great weekend and thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Last thing this week, we have week 3 pick'em. So we're going about this a little bit differently. So normally we were picking from top 50 matchups. With SEC play around the corner, a lot of SEC teams are kind of sticking to a little bit more low-key series this weekend. And really the only top 50 matchups that we have out there are ACC versus ACC. So we'll do a couple of those, but then we're just going to go back and forth and pick some series just across the country, just whatever catches our eye. So last week I picked 3 of the series, you picked 2. So Kyle, start us off. Which series should we pick first?
All right, let's see. I want to start off with a pretty electric matchup right off the bat. Number 3, Louisville, traveling to number 7, Georgia Tech.
I mean, we had to do this series. If you didn't pick it now, I was going to do it. So it's a top 10 matchup. It's Louisville's first ACC conference series of the year. Georgia Tech, like we've talked about, is just coming off a sweep of NC State on the road. I am a big fan of the Rambling Wreck. It's in Atlanta, but my gut says Louisville is a step ahead and wins 2 out of 3.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. But for the graphic and for the other side of my gut, I got to go Georgia Tech 2 out of 3. I think Georgia Tech has an electric offense, and they've already shown that they can beat some talented ACC teams. We haven't really seen it from Louisville this year. They've only lost one game, but they've lost a game, and Georgia Tech has like swept this weekend. So I'm going to go with the home field advantage, giving a slight edge to Georgia Tech 2 out of 3.
I like it. I'm going to go next. I'm looking at some of these ACC series, and I really want to pick one of them that has basically losers going up from last week going up against each other, because the two that I'm looking at is number 8 Miami at number 30 NC State, and then number 15 UVA at number 38 Florida State. So all 4 of those teams are teams that are really looking to win an ACC series, because losing your first 2 series, especially if you got swept in your first one, it is not a good way to start the year. So you know what? I'm going to choose Miami at NC State. Kyle, who do you have in that series?
Okay. I'm going to have to go Miami. NC State just kind of struggled on offense a lot this weekend. A little bit of pitching too. They were held to, I think, 5, no more than 5 runs in each game. Just because I can't remember what the 3rd one was. Otherwise, it would be like 3. I think Miami is just too talented to do what they did this past weekend again. I think they're a really good, talented team that's going to take some time this week to get it figured out. So, yeah, I'm going 2 out of 3 for Miami.
If we have a newly formed unwritten rule that we can't pick the exact same thing, then I'm going to go Miami sweeps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would have picked 2 out of 3 Miami, but I'm going to go with a Miami sweep. They have a bounce back weekend. The freshmen get back on track. The offense, which wasn't quite there, I mean, against Virginia Tech, there's no way that they go back-to-back weekends cold. They get the job done, sweep on the road, and get to 4-2 in ACC play and can pretend that last weekend didn't even happen. And then NC State starts off 0-6, and the whole team is tossed into the dumpster fire.
They're staring down the barrel of an 0-6 start.
Yeah.
That'd be that terrible. All right, so there's our two ACC series. For my second series, I will pick. All right, I gotta go with my Georgia State Panthers here. So I'm Georgia State at number 34, Tennessee.
You have to be the biggest Georgia State fan in the country.
I am. I just love that moxie that they have, like just taking all the top teams from the SEC West and the ACC, they're around them, and just we'll take them all.
Remind me what they've done. So they've gone 2-2 against West Virginia. They went 1-2 against Vanderbilt this last weekend. Is that right?
That is right. And then I think they even have Georgia Tech this weekend. So Atlanta, local Atlanta matchup, just going across town.
That's in the midweek.
Yeah, in the midweek. And then they went 1-3 against Vanderbilt this weekend. They played 4 games. They lost to Georgia in the midweek last week. They have Georgia Tech in the midweek this week, and then they go to Tennessee. Next week they have at Florida in the midweek. So, yeah, they have some really tough challenges, and you know, like on the road, most of them are on the road. But, yeah, I still like them. I think they're a really good team. I guess you got to pick first. Never mind.
Yeah. I'm not sure which direction to go here. Tennessee, I like the pitching staff a lot there. I think that, I mean, they were number 25 in our top 25 up until this last week, where they had like a little bit of a weird weekend. They went 2-2 against Indiana State, and including a walk-off in game 4, or else they would have lost that series. They pitched pretty well throughout the series, giving up 3 runs, 3 runs, 7 runs, and then 5 runs in the 11 inning game. I saw what Vanderbilt's offense did to Georgia State's pitching. I don't think Tennessee's offense is quite as good there. But is this 3 games or 4 games?
This is 3 games.
I'm going to go Tennessee sweeps.
Okay. And because I can't pick the same, but I do like what you're saying. Tennessee is a pretty good team that we think will be probably top 4 in the SEC East this year. I think is kind of what we landed on in the SEC East. But I just like Georgia State. I think they'll take game 1 and lose the next 2 just to shock them a little bit, kind of like what they did against Vandy. So I think Tennessee wins 2 out of 3.
Yeah, they won game 1 against Vandy, but that wasn't against Rocker or Leiter because they saved them for later in the weekend. So,
oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe not this game 1, but.
Because Rocker and Leiter had a pitch. They pitched on Monday in a doubleheader because of rain issues, so they saved Rocker and Leiter for later in the weekend. But,
oh, that makes sense.
You never know. I mean, you've been right more than I have, so I can't question you.
I guess I feel.
let's bring this back to Texas. Let's do a Texas flair here. This is a series I think is interesting. I think so. The series is Texas going to Houston. I wanted to put Texas back into our top 25. They didn't quite make it. They won 3 out of 4 against BYU this weekend. Houston is a team we've talked about on the podcast already a good amount, a little bit of an older team with JUCO transfers. They started off the year with not the strongest strength of schedule, but they've won games. Last year, they lost a series at home to Youngstown State. So that wasn't the strongest series, and they lost it. So credit to them. They've taken care of business. They're at, I think, 6-1 with series wins over Texas Southern and then Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They went down on the road against an Islanders team that swept Central Michigan to start the year. So, I mean, it's a solid Texas A&M Corpus Christi team down there. So Texas, I think if they win this series, would crack the top 25 again, likely. Going on the road to Houston, it could be a nice series win for them. So let's hear it, Kyle. Who's winning this one?
Yeah, and I like all of what you said. I think Texas could be in the top 25, and they would have probably this week if they had swept, but I mean, they lost a game. Other teams didn't ahead of them. Texas had like hasn't really shown us much this year. A top 50 team is supposed to beat BYU at least three out of four. But yeah, I do like Texas's offense here. But just because the Aggie in me, I graduated from A&M, I got to go Houston wins a series 2 out of 3. I don't like a sweep, but I'm going to go Houston 2 out of 3.
You made this one pretty easy for me. Then I'm going to go Texas 2 out of 3.
That's fair.
I think Texas's pitching is a step ahead. I don't have a whole lot of faith in their offense at this point. They did, to be fair, have a few games against BYU where their offense really showed up. So their offense is back on track. Obviously, the pitching staffs they faced at the College Baseball Showdown that kind of put them to shame were a lot better than BYU's pitching staff. But they were able to put together productive innings against BYU, which, while they're not a top 50 team, they took a couple games at Texas State the weekend before and are like a top 7,500 team. Like BYU is a solid team for sure. So I take the offensive success against the Cougars by Texas as legitimate. All right, let's round it out. Kyle, you get the last pick.
All right, let's see. You picked the other one that I wanted to pick. So I'm going to go San Francisco traveling across the town to Stanford. Stanford is one of those teams. What?
Interesting pick.
Yeah. So it's not a top. It is a top 50 matchup. Well, no, actually, we have Stanford just out of the top 50. But San Francisco is still in our top 50 after their series win at UCLA in week one. Stanford is a team who we didn't really know a whole lot about. They did not have a great start to the year last year. They're in that trio of teams, Rice, Fullerton, and Stanford, who we were all confused about how they started off on such a not good start. But this year, they have an insane offense so far. They've kind of just blown up on offense in week one. They've hit several home runs, and they have one of the best slugging percentages in the country, but we're going to need to see some more. But this is one of those series where I kind of want to see some, where I think we'll see some more. What do you think?
Yeah, I think basically everything went wrong for Stanford last year. Their starting pitching wasn't that great, but their offense was pretty bad. They've had four games on the year. They've scored 10, 8, 10, and then 0 runs against Santa Clara. Obviously that 0 stands out to you, but the other three games were pretty solid games, pretty impressive games. And a 3-1 start is a lot better than they were last year. So this one's a little bit of a tricky series. So they're doing two games at Stanford and then two games at San Francisco, just a 45-minute drive north of Palo Alto or so. So they're going to do a 4-game series here, half home, half away. I like San Francisco. After their performance last week against Cal, I'm a little worried that it was a little bit of a they caught UCLA on the right weekend type of moment. I think I'm going to go Stanford winning 3 out of 4 in this one.
I think that's fair. They kind of got exposed a little bit this weekend. And California is a pretty decent top half team in the Pac-12, probably. So that's kind of what we expect Stanford to be. Maybe not coming off of last year, but they're a team that is consistently talented enough to be there.
I think the coaches picked Stanford either fourth or fifth in the Pac-12. So the coaches, conference coaches, I think pretty highly of the Stanford team.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said 3 out of 4. I'm going to say Stanford sweeps.
Four games. If I had to pick third now, I would say 2 out of 2 and 2.
Oh.
I wouldn't have gone 4-0.
Fine by me. Yeah, I'll take it.
You know what? If Stanford does go 4-0 in this and moves to 7-1, I would be hard pressed not to have them in the top 50.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think, we do like San Francisco as a team, but yeah, if Stanford can sweep them or even go 3-1, I think if they really light it up offensively this week against San Francisco, I think Stanford could be in the top 50, maybe in the low 40s.
Yeah, I think the tricky thing is here, and something that we've gotten a lot of questions about is who else we considered for the top 50. And we're early enough in the year where there's teams that are undefeated that we didn't put in the top 50. For instance, like Charlotte, I believe, is undefeated, and Southern Illinois and Navy. We talked about them earlier, right? Like, there's just a lot of teams that could be ranked in the top 50. So, winning 3 or 4 games probably should be enough for Stanford to get into the top 50 if they were to do it. But we'll see.
Yeah, and another hard thing is this week Big Ten play starts.
Yeah, that's something that we haven't touched on yet. I looked over some of the Big Ten series, and they're doing some odd things. They're doing some tournaments.
All across the country.
Yeah, all across the country. None of the marquee matchups are early on this week in the season, but I'm sure we'll be talking more about Big Ten baseball starting next week.
Some other series we wanted to pick that we just didn't want to touch, but that we think are going to be fun to watch. The Frisco Classic, which is OU, Arizona, Dallas Baptist, and Mizzou. Those are some pretty good teams that are all pretty consistent. There's some good talented teams in there. We didn't want to touch that because that's really hard to pick. And I don't know, neither of us are very good at picking those, I think.
And they're doing it like where they like two of the teams play 2 games against each other. Yeah. And then to figure out who wins that is like pretty crazy. But OU and Arizona are playing each other twice, and those 2 games should be really fun. I think that the potential for some really talented offensive position players there is going to be really high. So that's, some must-watch baseball.
Absolutely. And then the Shriners Classic is also this weekend. And kind of the 3 teams versus the other 3 teams set up again. It's Rice, Texas Tech, and TCU versus Texas State, Sam Houston State, and A&M Corpus. Those are some good teams. Like, I think we would expect Tech and TCU to do really well in those series. But you never know. We look for some potential upsets in there. Sam Houston State's a pretty wily team that always sneaks up on people.
That's 6 Texas teams playing there.
Yeah.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. All right. Well, Kyle, thanks for joining me on the podcast. Happy as always to have you on.
Of course. Say hi to Omaha for me.
Will do. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed to us, be sure to do it on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, really anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, we're on social media at CollegeBallNat. We love chatting with fans on Instagram and Twitter. If you have a question for us, feel free to message us on either of those platforms and you might hear it answered on the podcast. Thanks for listening and have a great week.